From Washington, VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil reporting.
Vediamo Gesù nei bambini di tutto il mondo, dove la pace e la sicurezza sono minacciate dal pericolo di tensione.
Pope Francis, using his traditional Christmas message to call for a negotiated two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict to help bring peace to the Middle East. Pope Francis, to the city and to the world, addressed from the central balcony of St. Peter's Basilica, that children in the Middle East continue to suffer because of growing tensions between Israelis and Palestinians. He expressed his hope to tens of thousands of worshippers at the Vatican that the will to resume dialogue may prevail between the two parties and that a negotiated solution can finally be reached, one that would allow the peaceful coexistence of two states. This was the second time that the Pope spoke about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict since U.S. President Donald Trump's decision earlier this month to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Pope Francis called earlier for the status quo in Jerusalem to be respected to avoid new tensions in the Middle East. Pakistani authorities allowed the wife and mother of convicted Indian spy Kulbhushan Jadhav to visit him Monday, reiterating the step was taken purely on humanitarian grounds. The meeting lasted about 40 minutes and took place at the foreign ministry shortly after Jadhav's family members landed in Islamabad. He spoke to his wife and mother through a microphone from behind a specially arranged glass partition. The Indian deputy high minister in Islamabad was also allowed to accompany visitors. A diplomat could see Jadhav, but was not allowed to speak or listen to the conversation. This is VOA News. Russia and China each signaled Monday a desire for a peaceful resolution to the tension surrounding North Korea's nuclear and ballistic missile activity.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told state-run media Monday that no one wants to see war on the Korean Peninsula, and he hopes the United States is not planning a military approach to resolving the situation. In China, a foreign ministry spokeswoman said all countries should exercise restraint. The sanctions resolution that the Security Council passed unanimously Friday puts more limits on imports that support North Korea's missile and nuclear programs. North Korea is calling the latest sanctions an act of war. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Lawyers and politicians in Turkey are warning that a new emergency decree could incite violence and encourage formation of vigilante groups. Turkey's main lawyers group, the Union of Turkish Bar Associations, says the decree is vaguely worded and could lead to violence. The new law passed Sunday grants immunity to civilians who acted to stop an attempted coup in July 2016. Previously, the government gave immunity to law enforcement and government officials who took actions to thwart that coup. Turkey's former president, Abdullah Gül, a longtime ally of President Tayyip Erdogan, also expressed concern about the measure in a rare show of opposition. Gül said the law is worrisome and said it should be re-evaluated. Russian opposition politician Alexei Navalny is calling for boycott of the country's next presidential ballot after new developments involving him and election officials.
Outspoken Vladimir Putin critic Alexei Navalny has been barred from running in Russia's presidential election. The country's Central Election Commission voted on the decision on Monday, deciding the opposition leader was ineligible because of a past criminal conviction, which the 41-year-old says was trumped up. He has been a fierce opponent of Russian President Putin, who is widely expected to win re-election in March, extending 17 years in power. Following Monday's decision, Navalny immediately called for his supporters to boycott the election and said he would appeal the verdict, ruling him out of a run at the presidency.
Afghan officials say that a suicide blast early Monday in Kabul killed two intelligence officers and four civilians while injuring two people. That bombing occurred near a security checkpost on a busy road in the capital, and the bomber apparently wanted to target Afghan security forces. Somalia al-Shabaab militants have executed five people, including a 16-year-old boy who they accuse of spying for Kenyan, U.S., and Somali government forces. The boy and four men were publicly executed by a firing squad Sunday in the town of Adali. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. Jackson Ngany in Washington. Today is Tuesday, December 26th. Here are some of the stories we're covering for you. Liberians are voting today in a long-delayed presidential runoff election. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has declared the day a national holiday.
Voters will just ask them to please turn out. By the grace of God, this is the last stage of everything that we've done. I've been planning for the past 2 years, so we're appealing to Liberians to turn out.
That is Liberia's Elections Commission Chair, Jerome Kokoya. The international human rights organization Amnesty International says thousands of Somali refugees who were pressured into leaving Kenya's Dadaab camp are now facing drought, starvation, and renewed displacement in Somalia. The Ghanaian opposition groups say they would be meeting to come up with strategies to confront the recent amendment of the constitution, which enables President Yoweri Museveni to seek a sixth term in office.
Even if the term limits have been restored, we now believe that the constitution has been reduced to just a mere piece of paper, and this too can be changed at the will of Mr. Museveni.
Patrick Oboy Amriat is the newly elected chairman of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, FDC Party. Attackers in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo burned down a farmhouse belonging to President Joseph Kabila, killing a policeman. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian soldiers foiled an attempted terrorist attack by suspected Boko Haram militants on the city of Maiduguri, sending panicked residents fleeing for their lives. Army officials gave no details on what happened. The local militia leader told the French news agency that the militants used the cover of a civilian convoy to approach a military checkpoint outside the city and started firing. Boko Haram has killed about 20,000 people in its eight-year-long insurgency aimed at turning parts of Nigeria into an Islamic state. This Christmas, both Christians and Muslims are praying for peace to return to Cameroon. Until a few years ago, this country never experienced serious violence or unrest, but the Boko Haram insurgency in the north, spillover violence from the Central African Republic, and the turmoil in Cameroon's English-speaking regions have made life difficult for many. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the capital, Yaoundé.
30 youths representing churches and mosques are roaming the streets of Cameroon's capital, urging everyone to pray that peace returns to the troubled spots of this Central African state. Among the singers is Bertrand Bayaga of the Full Gospel Mission. He says he does not want more bloodshed in Cameroon.
Je prie le gouvernement de gérer ce problème avec tolérance.
Bayaga says he is praying for the government to be tactful and tolerant in finding solutions to all problems because he does not want the country that their forefathers shed their blood for to achieve its independence and unity to be divided. A nationwide prayer campaign was organized by Pastor Jean Libom Lilikeng of the Evangelical Church of Cameroon.
Si l'Éternel ne bâtit la maison, ceux qui la bâtissent travaillent en vain.
The pastor says he organized the prayers to call on God to urgently come to the help of Cameroon nation. He says through the massive participation and prayer he witnessed, he is satisfied that the country's elites and people of God have understood that God is calling them to contribute in bringing peace to Cameroon. Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. At the Yaoundé Central Mosque, Imam Umaru Issa says he is respecting the call for prayer because peace is under attack.
Every one of us must apply the command of the Almighty God to live in peace, in harmony with the other people everywhere we are. And we must be, all of us, without any distinction, ambassadors of peace.
Cameroon had not experienced any major challenges for decades In the past few years, however, it has been enveloped by the bloody Boko Haram insurgency in the north, incursions from armed groups based in the CAR, and calls for secession from two English-speaking regions where many feel ignored by the country's French-speaking majority. Peter Nzelen, who attended Christmas Day services at the Yaoundé Cathedral, says he especially hopes the government will engage in sincere dialogue with the secessionists.
It is good to bring people together, express your mind, bring the advantages and disadvantages of one system or the other, and you talk and agree. It is not a taboo. Don't think that the person who is claiming independence or anything is somebody who cannot even change his mind or sit on the table and talk.
Cameroon is due to hold parliamentary and presidential elections in 2018, with longtime president Paul Biya expected to seek a seventh term. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Liberians are voting today in a long-delayed presidential runoff election. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has declared the day a national holiday. Football legend George Weah of the Coalition for Democratic Change is contesting against incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling Unity Party. The runoff, which should have taken place since November 7th this year, has been delayed by many legal challenges against the October 10 first round vote. One of the key concerns raised was the ineffectiveness of the final registration roll, FRR, resulting in voter identification sharing and double registration. The Supreme Court ordered the Elections Commission to make certain corrections, including cleaning up the FRR. VOA's James Batty is in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, where he's covering the runoff election. He spoke to the Elections Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya, who tells him that the Election Commission is ready to administer today's vote.
Well, I'm glad to report that the commission has worked hard to comply strictly with the Supreme Court order with respect to cleaning of the roll as was directed. We completed that, and we've discussed and communicated that with the participating political parties. And now we've done, first we started by giving that roadmap that we're not objected to, and we'll follow that roadmap. We've done the cleaning as was directed, mandated by the court. We've put the list up, made it available in the hard copies as was directed by the court. We are in the process of our deployment and training have been completed. And so security situation, election security being also is in progress. So everything else that we need to touch to make sure that we have a successful elections.
If a voter, ordinary voter, was sitting here with you, Mr. Chairman, what would you like to tell that voter in terms of what they should do today on the voting day and what not to do?
What I would expect or request voters to do is first to be patient. One of the issues or the most important issues we've had have been people inability to locate their name on the roll. And this has been misinterpreted as name not being on the roll. The commission would like to reaffirm again that every Liberian that turned out and for registration during our voter registration exercise and who were registered at us and who were not subsequently disqualified got their name on our roll. Because the list contains so many names, there are process and steps you have to follow. And that's why we put the FRR at every 5,390 polling places. So when you get there, first thing to look, you got a cover sheet. You look at the cover sheet. A cover sheet contains something like this. It's like a range of your numbers. So you look at your own number. If your number falls, like for example, like you see between here and here, they will be directing you to polling place one. Okay, if you cannot use that, you can go down to the table of content. The table of content, for example, your name is Bote, so it starts with B. So it's the alphabet rating. If you find B across from B, you will see a number. That number will represent the page where everybody with B will start from. So you go to that number. If it is 9, go to page 9, and you start searching for your name in alphabetical order. That is important. But if you cannot do that, we have recruited we got queue controllers and precinct controllers that will be around to assist you.
So, Mr. Chairman, how many voters do you think were affected at all by this so-called multiplicity of voter ID? And what steps has your commission taken to make sure that this multiplicity of ID, voter ID, does not take place?
I don't know if that's the right description, multiplicity of ID. But to answer your question, what we have repeated voter numbers. That is, from the printer abroad, for example, if a voter number is 55, some of the numbers were printed twice or thrice, okay? And then when they came here, we don't look at those numbers. We send them in the field. So the issue to the voters. The voter number is just one of the distinguishing features of many features that you have on the voter ID card. For example, you have the face. Your face and my face different. Your age may be different from my age. Your maybe similar. Your sex certainly different from the co-chairs. And then the your address, code, and all of those stuff. So it didn't present any problem, even though these numbers were repeated. For example, I will have 55, you have 55, but we're two different people. But the court didn't like that. And if you told somebody that two voters got the same number, obviously people started to think, oh no, you know, something different. And so what we've done is we corrected those numbers, even though they did not present any problem, but it's proper for each voter to have his or her own number. So we have corrected those. But in the past, it didn't affect anybody at all.
That was Liberia's Elections Commission Chair Jerome Kokoya. He was speaking to VOA's James Batty, who is currently in Monrovia, Liberia, where he's covering the runoff election. Attackers in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo burned down a farmhouse belonging to President Joseph Kabila on Monday, killing a policeman. President Kabila was not at the house at the time of the attack. Congolese lawmakers in a statement condemned the attack, calling on the population to disassociate themselves from any actions likely to compromise peace and development in that part of the country. The DRC has been mired in a political crisis over Kabila's refusal to step down from power. His second and last term as president ended in December 2016. New elections that were supposed to have taken place in 2017 never happened. The international human rights organization Amnesty International says that thousands of Somali refugees who were pressured into leaving Kenya's Dadaab camp are now facing drought, starvation, and renewed displacement in Somalia. Amnesty says refugees who were already pressured to leave Dadaab are living in dire conditions in overcrowded cities or displacement camps in Somalia. Somalia's refugee commissioner, Ahmed Dahir Nour, says some of the refugees who returned to Somalia have gone back to Dadaab to live as refugees for a second time. Nour told VOA Somali Service reporter Harun Maruf that of the 74,000 people who voluntarily returned to the country, about 2,000 of them went back to Dadaab because of insecurity, drought, and lack of services.
So far, the record is about 110,000 plus voluntarily repatriated. 74 of them is from Kenya. Others are mainly from Yemen or Djibouti, even Eritrea. But 110,000 are being assisted with the help of UNHCR.
And how are they settling back home?
As far as you can imagine, drought, insecurity still exists in so many places in Somalia. That doesn't mean that people, they can't come back. They have the right to come back. In the record, with the information that we've got, UNHCR, all of these 74, only 2,000 returned back to Dadaab for different reasons. And maybe 1,000 or 2,000 also joined IDBs or might not have decent. There are lack of schools, lack of water, lack of shelter. But at this number, almost 95 plus already settled with the people.
Amnesty International is saying that conditions in Somalia are still very bad. Insecurity, drought, and hunger, which made life difficult for the refugees who were already forced to leave the Dadaab camps. Are these conditions still persistent on the ground? Is Somalia ready to receive refugees with these conditions existing in the country?
We very much appreciate Amnesty International and recently also the report that Heritage published, but I don't agree with them. I don't have an evidence that these people are being forced. And what I'm saying is that almost all of them integrated into the people. There are others who are fleeing in Somalia. New refugees are now going out of the country and looking for registration inside the DAB, in which they haven't got yet that kind of facilities. I don't mean we are stable, we are fine. Yes, drought we experienced, which created over 1 million IDVs internally. Many others left out of the country. But anyone who voluntarily wants to come back, it is a constitutional right, and we are willing and ready for our people to come back. They can assist us. They can be part of building their country. What we are seeking and in need is that let the international community, whoever donor is, assist us in order to get a service and to provide services here in the country. That will attract more. And at the end, few or maybe no Somali refugees in the region.
That was Somali Refugee Commissioner Ahmed Dahid Noor speaking to Somali Service reporter Harun Maruf. Ugandan opposition groups say they would be meeting to come up with strategies to confront the recent amendment of the constitution, which enables President Yoweri Museveni to seek a sixth term in office. Last week, parliamentarians from the ruling National Resistance Movement, NRM, voted to remove age limits that would have prevented the president from seeking additional terms in office. The NRM lawmakers voted 315 votes in support of the removal of the constitutional provision, while 62 opposed the measure. The opposition has also threatened to legally challenge the removal of the age limit in court, saying the process in parliament was fraught with irregularities. They also say that the move is an affront to democracy and the people of Uganda. But the supporters of the ruling NRM say the accusations are without merit, insisting that it is illegal and discriminatory to prevent somebody from becoming a presidential candidate because of his or her age. They contend that there are many world leaders who are over 75 years old. Patrick Oboy Amuriat is the newly elected chairman of the main opposition forum for Democratic Change, FDC party. He tells VOA's Peter Clotty that opposition and civil society groups would not be deterred in the fight against what he says is the NRM's violation of the constitution.
For us as a political party, we feel, you know, the last opportunity for us to have a smooth transition from one president to another is basically lost. And even if the term limits have been restored, we now believe that the constitution has been reduced to just a mere piece of paper, and these two can be changed at the will of Mr. Museveni. And so for us, we think the extension of the Museveni rule, which is now coming to 32 years and 35 years by 2021, is something that is undesirable. And, you know, Ugandans are going to run out of patience, especially, you know, those who think that being a president of this country has caused more problems to us than it has solved.
But this was done in parliament. Debates were heard. The process was followed. The NRM has a majority in parliament, and they voted on this. And they overwhelmingly approved the measure, which enabled President Museveni to sign into law. Why are people opposed to it, especially the FDC, your party?
Indeed, this is not any ordinary provision of the constitution. It was a provision of the constitution that should be read in totality with the rest of the constitution. And it's really something that affects the very core of our democracy. And really, one needs to put this whole issue in context. because their members of parliament were given opportunity to go out to consult. And wherever they went, the majority of Ugandans said, don't touch the constitution to remove age limits. And so really all the surveys indicate that the approval rating for the removal of age limit was just 15%. So 85% of the population disapproved the removal of age limit. This is certainly a big majority. You know, in the FDC and the opposition generally, we look at this amendment as a sham, something that cannot be accepted. And really, we are going back to the court of public opinion to consult with the public and cause, you know, an uprising against this particular provision.
What is the next line of action for the FDC since this provision has been made into law?
Well, for purpose of clarity, this is not a matter of the FDC alone per se. This is a matter of Ugandans. And so we, as the FDC, together with sister political parties who believe the same way we do, are just going to provide the leadership for Ugandans. We are going to be in a position to spell out the necessary actions we are going to take in order to resist in the strongest terms possible this obnoxious law. And so today, the political parties that subscribe to the same school of thought addressed a press conference here in Kampala. And we equivocally condemned the passing of the constitutional amendment. We are going to make a statement of our next course of action at the turn of the year in January, precisely on the 9th.
How do you resist a law? On what grounds are you going to resist it? And aren't you going to put your supporters in harm's way if they clash with security operatives, the police, and perhaps the army?
The rules of procedure were violated by the Speaker of Parliament, who is really supposed to be the custodian of the rules of procedure. We saw the Right Honourable Speaker fumbling on these rules, and I believe that her ruling, in most cases, her ruling, she personally did not believe in what she was ruling. This is a matter that has not been settled yet. You know, for all intents and purposes, what the parliament did amounted to sub judice, you know, discussing a matter that is before a competent court of law. And therefore, under the law, specifically Article 3 of the Constitution, we are called upon by Ugandans, in fact, commanded by the Constitution, to protect the Constitution by those who choose either to overthrow it, abrogate it, amend it, suspend it unlawfully.
Patrick Oboy Amuriat is the newly elected chairman of Uganda's main opposition forum for democratic change, FDC Party. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotty from the capital, Kampala. And that's it for this Tuesday, December the 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty, I am Jackson Mvunganyi in Washington, wishing you a good day, Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC.